terrific example of how we could see partnerships between youth who've experienced homelessness or poverty or been a part of the foster care system, coupled with students who haven't had those experiences. Can you imagine the power of being able to do problem solving, bringing those folks together? So I think it's really brilliant to have these kinds of initiatives where we bring out the voices of people affected by policy and issues to be able to help in the problem solving, because that is it's a sustainable way of looking at problem solving, and it's workable.
Thanks to Susan Roll for that interview. The Butte County Youth Advisory Council serves youth between the ages of 14 and 24 who have experience with homelessness, foster care, incarceration, or poverty. If you or another youth would like to join, our meetings are on the first and third Tuesdays of every month at 6th Street Center for Youth from 3 to 4 p.m. Snacks are provided, and we do activities surrounding empowerment, leadership, and well-being. You can find us on Facebook at BC Youth Advisory Council, so check out what we're doing. Once again, thanks to Bill Nash for letting us host this program, and have a good night.
Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof radio program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR.
That was Without a Roof, being hosted by Josh Indar, and while Bill is off on a family vacation. Coming up next is Non-Human Radio. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salad, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and they're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by the Chico Chamber of Commerce, committed to enhancing the economic vitality of Chico for its businesses and residents. For more information about chamber impacts and opportunities and to join, visit ChicoChamber.com or call 891-5556. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino, and I want to say welcome back to Danny, my co-host.
Thank you. I'm Danny Toms. I'm back from traveling to quit my job, so I stuck it to the man. Today, we are going to talk about fine vegan dining in the south of France, the demise of dairy in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, because France and Pennsylvania go well together, and the case against California eggs that was settled by the Supreme Court. Jeannie?
For the first time in history, French state representatives awarded the title of Master Restaurateur, or Maître Restaurateur.
I'm so glad Jeannie took the French article.
To a vegan chef. Chef Willy Berton was awarded the prestigious title for his restaurant Vegan Gorilla. That's such a, like, American-sounding name.
Is that Gorilla?
Vegan Gorilla. Where he serves inventive dishes that change weekly, such as open-faced sandwiches, which are called tartines, with vegan fromage cheese and chia-based caviar. He also has things like fishless bouillabaisse, which is a stew, a fisherman's stew, mushroom-based kofta balls over couscous. That's a Middle Eastern type, or even Indian-type influence, and things like strawberry cheesecake. Berton launched the 30-table restaurant with his wife Camille, who is a pastry chef who's been vegan for 3 years, in an effort to bring healthy, organic, and mostly raw food to the region without harming animals. The Master Restaurateur title was created in 2007 and is awarded by local representatives on behalf of the French state. The French take their food very seriously, so an award like this, I think, is a pretty serious thing. And it's backed by the opinions of an independent judging committee. The awardee must be a professional chef by trade with professional experience and must commit to using the best raw, fresh produce. Berton will hold this title of Master Restaurateur for the next 4 years. So.
Cool. I mean, this is great because as any most vegans and vegetarians know, French restaurants are not very forgiving for us. And maybe this will spark some minds over there. I also like that it's for 4 years, so he can really, or they can really get a footprint in.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at his website, and it's a small place. It doesn't look even particularly snooty or pretentious. It's just really nice, clean, and dedicated to a changing menu for whatever's in season, mm-hmm. which is always a good way to go, right? Any of the really good restaurants in town that I like tend to feature whatever local and in season, because that'll taste the best.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a food point of view, it's great, and people that are, you know, more on the foodie side, there's always sort of a tension between, you know, one reason McDonald's is successful is some people like to eat the very same thing every day, anywhere they are. So, I don't know, in future healthy restaurants, you know, how do you kind of make that work, you know, for the masses?
Yeah, well, and then just a note on the location of this. It's in Nice, France, which is in the south of France. It's actually along the French Riviera.
I hear it's very nice.
It is. I see what you did there. Okay. So anyway, yeah, it was just pleasing to read that because I know the French are, they do have a very sharp sense of what French cuisine is, mm-hmm. right? They wrote the book literally on classic cuisine with certain set sauces and set types of entrees. So it's nice to see that culinary professionals, foodies, right, are expanding what they consider to be the epitome.
It's definitely shocking, you know, in France that a vegan restaurant won.
Yeah. So.
They got some good-looking food, pasta puttanesca. I really like that one.
Yeah, and, you know, and that they're, you know, taking vegan cheeses seriously is kind of cool, too, because we know cheese was invented in France if you talk to a French person. So. Anyway, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. On to you, Danny.
Our next story, Veg News reports that the dairy industry in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is one of the state's leading dairy-producing counties, is experiencing a sharp decline due to a decreasing consumer demand for milk. Penn State Extension dairy educator Mauricio Rosales told the Lancaster Online News that the industry is struggling every day on how to become profitable in a market that is shrinking more and more.
So sad.
Because,
too bad.
As we know, I mean, the dubious profitability of these government-subsidized industries set aside, they're also profitable based on, you know, mechanization, confinement, and massive, massive scale. So if you take...
And, you know, causing these animals to produce more milk than ever before.
Right. So, right. If you take away some of that demand, some of that scale, the economics aren't there. Rosales also revealed that in May of 2017, earlier this year, dairy corporation Lando Lakes imposed limits on the volume of milk it would source from dairy farmers in Lancaster County. According to Lancaster County Agricultural Council Chairwoman Lisa Grabiel, quote, "The dairy industry is not going well, and it hasn't been well in a long time," pointing to the decrease in milk consumption as the reason behind the industry's problems.
Blame the consumer.
Yes, and as I think that might be right in this case, but that's mm-hmm. good. As we know around here, you know, with the rise of almond milk and almond growing, you can kind of see that cause and effect. You can also see that it doesn't necessarily take away jobs, just adds jobs. different industries. Lancaster isn't the only county in the state where dairy is no longer profitable. Last week, major Pennsylvania dairy plant Gallagher's Dairy in the Johnstown area severed ties with 11 milk suppliers due to a recurring surplus of dairy products that has not been able to sell to consumers. The decline of dairy in the state of Pennsylvania is representative of a paradigm shift away from the animal-derived product, both in the country and worldwide, supported by current predictions that the plant-based milk industry will be worth $16 billion by 2018. That's great. However, milk-based products like butter and yogurt are growing in popularity. People somehow feel like, it's sour, therefore it's healthier. So some of the surplus dairy milk is finding a home there, and some farmers are setting up creameries to make their own cheese and ice cream, a little harder for humans to resist. That said, farmers get paid more for drinking milk than they do for milk that goes into butter, cheese, and other products. So, that's, I think, a continuing trend we've been seeing over a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it does highlight, though, that there's still a demand for milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, people are just not drinking it by the glass like they used to.
Right.
And, you know, we see
it's in other products.
Yeah,
it's in desserts.
A whole wall of yogurts at the supermarket. And, the plant-based ice creams, as far as I've seen, usually like the Ben & Jerry's and the Soy Delicious and Tofutti and other brands, those all come in pint size. Those are like gourmet.
Yeah, you can't get the big bucket of it.
The bucket-o ice cream.
And if you did, it would unfortunately be $30 right now.
And then what else? Another thing I did find, too, which I thought was sort of interesting, is that the vegan cinnamon roll chain Cinnaholic is opening a franchise location at the end of next month, July, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So go vegan, you know. Have you had Cinnaholic?
I have not.
You haven't?
It's probably a good thing because I like such things. It reminds me, I had a friend, who was, 35 or something, visiting me, and, he wanted his glass of milk every day, and this was even as a vegetarian, and I was just kind of like, are you 12? I mean, adults don't drink massive pints of milk every day. It's just not good for you, but it was, kind of going back to people who like to eat what they eat, and his diet was the same diet he'd had at 12.
Literally. Yeah.
It didn't change. He's doing better now. He got married and got his blood test results in and got a little healthier, but.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, no, there's a lot to be said for changing old habits and acknowledging that it's hard, but it's possible.
Right.
So
what's next, Jean?
Anyway, do you want to report on the Supreme Court, SCOTUS? The Care2 site reports that the egg industry's latest attempt at fighting California regulations on eggs got a smackdown at the Supreme Court of the United States just last week when the justices declined to hear a case challenging California's AB 1437, which was a bill that requires all eggs sold in California to meet the state's animal welfare standards. So it affects out-of-state producers that need to house their chickens in ways that are compliant with California regulations. The lawsuit highlights the fact that California laws are clearly here to stay, as this isn't the first time that the ag industry has tried and failed to weaken them. It's also a reminder that even California's so-called radical animal welfare standards are still pretty dismal.
Yeah, I don't think this is SCOTUS caring about animals at all, but it's pretty clear state rights issue.
Yeah. So in 2008, California voters approved Prop 2 as a referendum measure on the ballot, and that mandated that farm animals should be able to turn around, lie down, and move their limbs. That's very radical in the animal ag industry.
Yeah, was that one of the farm sanctuary bills?
I think it had multiple animal organizations supporting it, but yeah, Farm Sanctuary was top.
One of the things we touch on is different varieties of activism and financial support does go to some of these different organizations which use it in the legal arena to make good change, which takes time.
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of grassroots effort. So anyway, that measure was, Prop 2 was implemented by the AB 1437 bill, and that extended protections for hens to any production facility that wants to sell eggs in California. And at that time, egg producers either responded by pulling out of the California market or cleaning up shop and complying with the law. And the egg industry didn't comply without a lot of protest, however. Some complained that the ballot measure and laws were too vague, and they complained in court about this, or too onerous. And several states with large chicken egg production operations tried to claim that California was harming their states as a whole because of potentially higher costs of doing business.
Oh, because they sell to California?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were saying, oh, this California law is hurting our economy in wherever, Idaho, North, Iowa, other places that have big egg operations. Judges repeatedly dismissed those allegations, saying that possible economic harm to some chicken producers that want to sell in California doesn't harm states as a whole, as was the case in this recent, in this judgment, this dismissal by the Supreme Court. The industry is being forced to adhere to the law, but a closer look at specifics realized that it's not as rosy as it may appear. It's not as radical as it may appear, or as that animal egg wants us to believe. As we've discussed on the show a lot of times, the law still permits confinement in small cages. They're just a little bigger than the battery cages that were once used. Some farmers complied with the law by converting to so-called cage-free. That just means running loose in a barn with a confined environment that's just doesn't have individual cage walls, and that encourages the spread of disease. And furthermore, behavioral critics argue that without environmental enrichments, these chickens can develop behavioral problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. Go ahead.
Yeah, so just attacking each other.
I mean, it's not good to be crammed in a cage and immobile. It's also not good to be crammed in a bigger cage with 5,000 of your friends.
Yeah, pooping
right.
And not getting cleaned up. So. Living conditions for free-range chickens, so-called free-range chickens, doesn't match consumer expectations either. These chickens are kept and confined in large barns, but with access, quote, access to the outdoors in the form of a door. Many chickens are too terrified or too stressed to go outside by that door. And so, you know, what's the use of having that access? In the end, it's the consumers who have the greatest influence on the future for all farm animals. After all, some major retailers and wholesalers are responding to calls for more humane options outside of laws and regulations. However, as a consumer, you should be educated and aware of what these various designations really mean, and it's often just a reassuring marketing buzzword that may describe conditions that, you know, you would not support. Anyway, so if California's relatively weak law was a response to consumer pressures, the growing evidence that people want, the underlying evidence is that people want better conditions for farm animals, and it signals that there's future change.
Right. I mean, it's precedent, as we always say with the legal issues, and you want to establish precedent, and then that lets you change things in the future. You know, the door thing kind of reminded me of both they have this door, and some of the cost was saying, well, the law is vague and it's inspecific, and that's intentionally so. And this is a common tactic that, you know, you'll see on conservative side of thing, or even what's going on with healthcare, is they won't allow a specific bill to be passed. So I'm sure they had to make this bill vague enough, because when they said, well, we want 12-foot cages, it wouldn't pass. So,
yes.
So they had to make it very vague in order to pass, and then the same opponents that force you to make it vague, then turn around and say, oh, it's too vague, it's not right.
Yes.
Much like the American healthcare repeal, the conservatives destroyed the bill, set it up for failure, and now are running around claiming it failed without, you know, it's obvious to everyone who followed the whole saga that they set up the preconditions for failure. And that's just something to be aware of when fighting these legal battles.
Thank you for the clear-eyed assessment of the scenarios that go on with these big fights over established procedures that make a lot of money for a few companies.
Right.
So I just thought we'd talk about eggs just a little bit before we get to the calendar.
Sure.
So you may be wondering, okay, all right, maybe I don't want any part of free range or cage-free eggs. And so what am I supposed to do, right? So let me just point out a couple of things that you can use if you're baking, right? Say you're baking muffins or a cake. You can use banana. You have to figure out what an egg is doing in a recipe.
Right.
And mostly it's providing some moisture, maybe some fat, and maybe this so-called mysterious binding capacity.
And I also think historically a lot of these recipes were, you know, sort of poverty recipes, and you just throw an egg in something if you got an egg around because it gets you more nutrition.
That too.
Many recipes don't need an egg, but yeah, let's look at the replacements.
So you can use a banana.
Mm-hmm.
One mashed banana will equal one egg. in cakes and pancakes, and it's really good in pancakes.
I made banana bread last night, and its recipe course calls for an egg in addition to bananas, and that's where I kind of get back to a lot of these recipes are just throwing an egg because it doesn't need it.
Yeah. Flaxseed. So you guys may not know what flaxseed is. It's a really tiny seed, and you have to grind it up. You can grind it up in a coffee or spice grinder, or you can buy it pre-ground. And it has a lot of other good stuff to it, such as fiber and omega-3 fatty acids, which your brain needs and which are easy to get with flaxseed. You don't need to buy a fish or buy fish oil supplements to get omega-3s. Anyway, 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed with 3 tablespoons of water will make a goopy, gelatinous egg replacement.
Gelatinous.
So if you add that to your cupcake recipe or your cake recipe, it will hold moisture in. It'll help you have a nice moist cake, and won't affect the rising or anything like that. It'll still be just as good. Chia seeds, you can use the same way. And chia seeds have similar benefits to flax, except I think they have some good proteins going on in there too. Applesauce is a traditional substitute for cupcakes and cakes to add moisture, but no fat. So if you're going for a low-fat or no-fat type baking scenario, you could use applesauce. And the replacement for that is 1/4 cup of applesauce to 1 egg. And if you want to add extra leavening to it, you can add an extra 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, because fruit purees sometimes tend to make the final product a little denser. So that is something else to look at. And then there's a couple of like commercial egg substitutes, such as the energy egg replacer and the vegan egg, which are these, and Bob's Red Mill egg replacers. Those use various kinds of starches and algae gels to help with the binding.
You can get all of those around town, and in my experience, the vegan egg is superior to the other products.
The vegan egg is made by Follow Your Heart, and it comes in a little carton that looks like one of those traditional egg cartons, and it has the instructions for the replacement right there on there. And it is great to add into baked goods, although I wouldn't add the water part on that, correct? You just add the powder in general?
No, it's typically 1 tablespoon to 1/2 cup of water, because you're trying to replace the liquid in the egg.
So how many eggs would that be?
That is basically 1 egg.
And then they have a cup of water? I think it could be
kind of a large egg. Okay. So you can, nothing is rocket, is set in stone. You can adjust it. And they also have some fine print saying, well, if it calls for 2 eggs, don't do a cup of water.
Okay.
Because if you follow it blindly and need something called for 6 eggs, you would be unhappy.
Okay. And then some folks can throw in some mashed potatoes. Another option is just to leave out the eggs altogether. I'll tell you a little tip. If you buy often those boxed mixes of cake mix in the supermarket, like was it Duncan and Hines or Duncan Hines is the one that I'm most familiar with as a boxed cake mix. You can leave the egg out altogether and throw in a diet soda or a sugary soda in there. And that can, 1 can of diet soda can be used to replace 2 eggs in a lot of those cake box recipes. So that actually is like, people don't believe it, right, but it's actually surprisingly effective. So, yeah. So those are some like cooking hints. We'll probably be doing more cooking-oriented type support on this show. So if you have any questions or need some help in veganizing something, or just don't know how to manage in the kitchen without an egg or some other product, give me an email. Shoot me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com, and we will go ahead and do our best to answer your questions. So now we're coming up to the calendar of events. I just want to point out a couple of events coming up in the near future. So Thursday, tomorrow, Plant-Based Chico. Nancy Matthews was my guest host last week. She's going to be hosting her monthly meeting of Plant-Based Chico at the Chico Guild Hall at 2775 Nord Avenue. That's off of West East Avenue. It meets from 6 to 9 p.m., and tomorrow is going to be their tips and tricks
workshop. Is that formerly the Grange Hall?
It is formerly the Grange Hall. They underwent a change in management and affiliation, so now they're no longer affiliated with the National Grange Group. Plant-Based Chico will be meeting to discuss plant-based websites, YouTube channels, and other resources for a whole foods plant-based diet. And if you want more info, you can find their group on Facebook under Plant-Based Chico. And that's a very supportive group. And coming up this weekend, July 1st, on Saturday, July 1st, is the first annual K California Summer Veg Fest in San Jose at the Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. And that's going to be an outdoor event with many vendors and places to buy vegan food and some food trucks. And it should just be a fun kind of event. It's their first one, so I wish them all the best. And that's about it. I think that'll do. Just a shout out for July 22nd. Mark your calendars for Saturday, July 22nd. It's the fourth Saturday. It's the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room. And the theme this month is going to be the farmer's market. So we get to shine with our local produce and fruit, which is so amazing here in Chico. That's it for the calendar. If you have an event or other news that you want to share, send an email to chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. We have one last bit of business to take care of, and that is the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
Our quote this week is from George Orwell's Animal Farm. It is a seminal work. Many of you may have been forced to read it in high school, but I would suggest rereading it. It is increasingly relevant again. Quote, "Man is the only creature that consumes without producing. He does not give milk. He does not lay eggs. He is too weak to pull the plow. He cannot run fast enough to catch rabbits. Yet he is lord of the animals. He sets them to work. He gives back to them the bare minimum that will prevent them from starving. And the rest he keeps for himself." Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you.
Thanks, Danny. That's a great quote. I need to go back and revisit those old high school favorites.
And it's short.
The book is surprisingly short. Yeah, I was looking at it yesterday. I was like, dang, I should reread this.
I wouldn't suggest go read 1984 because that's long.
It's also 1984 is like too much like today.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas Animal Farm is more of a, you know, it's an allegory of the modern condition.
Yep.
So this has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to listen over and over again, go to the archives at kzfr.org. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind,
and go vegan.